This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
I'm here now with Sirko Muller from AKM in Germany, and he just gave a really interesting talk at the conference today. First of all, I'd just like to start with, can you explain a little bit about how meteor storms and how meteor showers actually happen?
Well, I mean, typically, what is the difference between an ordinary night where you just see a few meteors and a meteor storm or meteor shower is, an ordinary night you have maybe a bunch of 3 or 4 or 5 meteors an hour, but at certain times of year you have more activity, you have a meteor shower or in some cases even a meteor storm, and they all have the same origin. So the origin is some comet which left a dust trail somewhere in the solar system, and once the Earth is entering this dust trail, then of course we see more of these particles entering the Earth's atmosphere, and so we see more meteors. Although that's the difference between a meteor shower or even a meteor storm. When you are very close to the center of such a dust trail, then you see a real meteor storm, an ordinary activity which you have a few meteors every hour from every direction.
Okay, so it's formed by a comet just having left a trail.
Exactly.
When the meteors sort of interact with the atmosphere, do they happen sort of all the way through? Do they tend to just be on the outside?
Well, I mean, what we see is just a very short streak of light, which typically lasts about 0.3, 0.4 seconds, so very short. And such a particle which is entering the Earth's atmosphere is very small. So it's typically just a fraction of a gram, up to a gram at most, so a few millimeters in size. And of course, this is burning up completely high up in the atmosphere. So what we see is actually the meteor at an altitude of about 100 kilometers. And after a few fraction of a second, everything is gone. The meteoroid, so the original particle, is completely disintegrated. Nothing is left.
You've been doing lots of work with observations.
Yes.
How do you actually do observations of meteors? Because I mean, you don't know exactly where they're going to be.
Okay, I mean, the old style observation is visual observation, which I also do myself because it's a big fun. You just go outside, look for a dark site, and take a chair or something, and then watch the sky and count the meteors. And what we have started about 20, 25 years ago is to use video cameras. If you take a very sensitive video camera and simply point it to the sky, you have fair chances to record meteors. So they are a little less sensitive than your human eyes. So typically you see more meteors when you do visual observation. But the advantage of a camera, of course, is that it can run for hours, for days, for months, and it can, in the end, collect many more meteors. Well, of course, you do not know where in the sky a meteor will suddenly show up, but that's simply by chance. So you point the camera somewhere, and you will always have some meteor which cross your field of view, and you have many more meteors which go left or right or above or below your field of view.
So when you're actually doing the observations, do you have specific places where you go to observe, or do you just sort of do them where you happen to be?
Well, I mean, typically we have these automated camera systems which are installed, for example, at the houses of the amateurs who contribute to this network. So they are typically fixed. And it's not really that we choose a perfect site, astronomical sites, but it's really where people are living. They installed on their balconies, they installed on the roof, sometimes even near city centers, which is of course not the best site for astronomical observations, but it's fairly okay for meteor observation. And in special cases, like if you have a specific meteor shower which is visible only at a very specific time, like the Draconis last year, of course then you have to have a look at the weather map and then decide maybe on short notice whether you stay at home or whether you take your equipment, put it into the car, travel a few hundred kilometers and miles and put it then somewhere, hopefully under clear skies. But this is really the exception for special events.
So quite a lot of the data comes from amateur astronomers.
Definitely. That is most of the meteors that we are collecting nowadays are collected by amateurs who are doing the everyday profession as, physicists, chemists, computer scientists like me, or not professional astronomers.
In your talk, you were talking about measuring sort of magnitudes and measuring the fluxes, so the number that you get. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, I mean, the interesting point is when you see the meteors, of course, they have different brightnesses, and if you simply count the meteors, that gives you an idea of how many particles there are, because there are so many factors which are actually influencing your count. On the one hand, the most important factor is the limiting magnitude. So what is the faintest visible star that you can see, or translated to meteor, how faint a meteor can be that you still see. Another aspect is, of course, the size of your field of view. Either you have a tiny, small field of view and you will miss many meteors, or the other extreme is if you have an all-sky camera, then you can record the full sky, of course. A third factor is the direction, the observing direction, whether you point your camera at the north, to the south, to the zenith. And the calculation, what we have done, is really to try to incorporate all of these conditions, to really incorporate into the formula where the camera is looking at, how sensitive it is, how big the field of view is, and then to normalize this observation, that we can compare data from different cameras and join them, but also to compare showers under different conditions, like showers which are springtime showers or fall showers, showers of different velocity, and so on.
Do you get quite a difference between the spring and the autumn showers?
Yes, of course, there are differences. I mean, I'm talking about the sporadic background that I mentioned first, the meteors that show up every night, and there we typically have low activity in the springtime and higher activity by a factor of 2 or 3 higher in fall. And then we have these major meteor showers, and they have specific dates. Though the most well-known showers are the Perseids, which are active in the mid of August, although well-known are the Geminids, which are even a little more active than the Perseids, around mid-December. But typically, I mean, weather in mid-December is cold and clouded, so they are not that famous as the Perseids. And you have the Orionids, which are active around 23rd of October every year. And, well, these are most of the most strongest showers. So the meteor showers, they are not equally spread over the year, but you have certain times where these show up. And the typical months are mid of August and then early December and most of the autumn time.
Okay. There's one that's coming up fairly soon, which is quite exciting. You said end of October.
Yeah, by the end of October, though, the Orionids, the activity starts typically around, say, October 15, 16, 17. They are really getting strong by about October 20, and then they have quite a plateau of activity for about 3 or 4, up to 5 days. So between October 20 and 25, you have a fair chance to observe one or the other Orionid. What's always important is that the radiant, so the point in the sky where the meteor apparently seemed to come from, that this radiant is high above in the sky. And for the Orionids, obviously, the radiant is in northern Orion. So the best time to watch the Orionids is always when Orion is highest above the horizon. So this is the right time. And, of course, beside the time, what's always important is to find a dark side, because you can try to observe them from the center of a city, but it's you will see many, many more meteors if they are outside, if you're outside in the rural area and have dark skies.
Oh, brilliant. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks.